Okay, I think we can start. Sarayim Tovim, Erev Tov. Pleasure to welcome back Yosefa Rubel for part three, the middle part, the Ikar part, the middle, always the most important in our tradition. So we'll see how it plays out in Shir HaShirim. Where are you and who are we building up the relationship? Bakasha Yosefa.
Okay. I just want to say happy exercising to those who are joining us while exercising. I appreciate the open camera. I do. I don't care what anyone's doing. I'm happy we're all here. Great to be back. I have to say I'm very excited because we have some and also great Torah and some really interesting music that whenever I teach anything, I always redo, reorganize, rethink, relearn, and I found a new song that I'm very excited about that you'll all hear soon. So indeed, we're moving into our third class of our five-part series, and here we're going to see. It's actually not going to be the climax. We're going to get to that part in our next class. But we're going to see the continuation of the building of a relationship, poems that reflect a building of a relationship between the Dod and the Re'ayah, and that also have some really powerful midrashic parallels as well. So we'll get started. And please, if somehow, again, I said before that I'm pretty sure I figured out how to do the new Zoom updated sharing PowerPoint so that not everyone sees all the other stuff around it. But if for whatever reason something goes wacky, please don't hesitate to tell me now. If you can't see something, I would like it to be comfortable for everybody now. And one other thing that I'll say is that I sent Rabbi Kelman the PowerPoint, which is on the website, so that you had it. That was the request from last time. Sometimes I make changes as I go along. So if there are any changes, I'm going to update it on the website after. But I hope that whoever wanted to print it out was able to have access like they wanted. I remind you that in the poems, the purple is the Re'ayah, the green is the Dod, is the male speaker, and the yellow I'll explain in a minute. Okay, so just everyone can see in front of you, that's what you see the poem in front of you. Kol Dodi Hinei Zeba. Okay, as you see, I've already broken it up into the poetic parts of the sentence, okay? And the pasuk, when you read it in Shir HaShirim, it just flows as one line. However, if you read with the ta'amim, you'll be able to read it like this. And this, of course, makes the pasuk much more meaningful for us to be able to understand it better. Kol Dodi Hinei Zeba. Okay, the voice of my beloved, here it comes. Now, a voice, of course, can actually travel physically on feet, which is the meaning of the word ba. However, we understand that this is the poetic description, right? I hear the voice of my beloved coming. Imagine hearing an echo. Midaleg al ha'arim mekapetz al ha'gvo'ot. Okay, I hear the voice of my beloved, really literally bouncing from mountain to hill. If you were ever, I'm sure, on beautiful hikes in Canada or on Tulim here in Israel, where you walk in a ravine, you can say anything and hear your echo around you. And here she compares her beloved to the gazelle and the deer, and which of course they themselves are swift moving. Okay, so both her beloved and his voice in this case are both swift moving. Hine ze omed achal kotlenu. Okay, and here we have a description that her beloved is standing behind the wall. He is looking through, he's looking at the windows, and he's peeking out from in between the cracks. And I also just want to remind us of the concept of parallelism, which is so critical to any verse of biblical poetry. Here's just a great example. Mashkiach min achalonot. Matzitz min acharakim. Mashkiach is parallel to mitzitz, okay? He's looking over or peeking out. And the chalon is parallel to the charak, which is the openings, okay? Just like a window is an opening, so too is there a crack and opening. Okay, and that's how biblical poetry is built, okay? It's a very, very important concept in all poetic verses in Tanakh. And so here we have a description that she hears her beloved coming. She can hear her from afar. And now he is peeking, right? He's peeking into where she is in her home. He's able to see inside. I couldn't hold back from showing you a picture from, hold on, from Shakespeare. Okay, now I can't say this is exactly what it looked like, but this is certainly where my mind went to. Now here we have the Dod who was coming to pursue her from outside her home, and here's the Ra'ya. That's the image that comes to mind for me for sure. Going back to the poem. Now, what does he say to her? Okay, that's her introduction to hearing him outside. What does he say to her? Kumi lach rayati yafati ulechi lach. He says, come, get up for yourself. We'll explain this soon. Get up for yourself, my beloved, my beautiful, and go for yourself. Ki hine hastav aval hageshem chalaf halachlo. Because the winter, the fall, okay, and the winter season, which here in Israel is just rain, not much cold, even here in Efrat. And so the season has already passed. The time to be inward, to be timid and to hold back, that has already passed. Hanitzanim nir'u ba'aretz et hazamir higia. He says, now the blossoms, right? The blossoms are coming out. And the time, the season of the zamir, which in this case is a bird, okay? V'kol hator nishma ba'artzeinu. We're hearing all of the birds who sing as the spring arrives. Hateina chanta fageha, hagfanim smadar nat nureach. And not only am I hearing the sounds of spring, but I can see that the blossoms, here we have the fig blossoms and also the grapes, okay? They've started to already give off their smell. They don't blossom in the summer, by the way, the grapes, which is why the pasuk doesn't say that, but they're starting to give off a smell. They're starting to develop. And he's saying, kumi lach ra'ati yafati ulechi lach, saying just like the world around us is coming to life, okay? All of the fauna and the flora, everything is coming alive. So too, you should stop holding back, stop holding yourself inward and mimic the nature around you. Now, just to show again, a picture of what we're speaking about here. Here we have, I don't actually know which blossoms, but I thought it was a beautiful picture. And here we have exactly what it means to for the figs to start blossoming. The pag, right? The small figs are starting to develop. I will say a little known fact about Yosef Arubel is that figs are my favorite food. I don't know why. I probably should have appreciation for all of nature, but for some reason, I think that fresh figs are like God's gift to the world. I think that they're just, I also have these beautiful memories of picking them off of the trees when I first came to Israel, and I was, for my second time in Israel when I was 18, and we would go into Lim and I would pick figs off and eat them. They were in public places, it was allowed. And I just think that you open them up, there's like an entire world inside. No one in my family agrees with me. My children all think that figs are gross, which I understand. They have an interesting texture, but I just think that they're the most unbelievable fruits. You could say the same thing about an orange, and you can open up the whole world inside. I don't know why, but figs really move me, but not dried. Drying figs is like killing figs. Anyways, so here we have, he says, you should go out and be like the spring. Go and blossom like them. Yonati pasuk yodalid, okay, verse 14. Yonati bechagve hasela beseter hamadriga, and here we have the image of her as being a turtle dove. He says you are like a turtle dove that is hidden in the rocks. Okay, imagine again if you want to think of an image, a lot like the turtle doves that we sometimes will see by the kotel. You're hiding. Harini et maraich, hashmiini et kolech. Okay, show me your beautiful face, and I want to hear your voice. Ki kolech arev umarech naveh, because your voice is beautiful and so is your face. Okay, here we have a very different dynamic than what we saw. We have another part of the poem, I am aware. I just want to explain it before we get there. That we have a very different dynamic going on than we had in the previous poems that we saw last week. Here we have a situation where she is holding back. Okay, the woman is holding back, and the man is trying to convince her to come out and be confident, just like nature around her. Be inspired by the world around you. Now, the reason why this is one of my favorite poems in Shir HaShirim is because of the phrase, lach. Okay, he doesn't say, come and see me because I really want to see you. He says it at the end. But the first three psukim, he emphasizes that it should be for you. Okay, when he says kumilach lechilach in pasuk yud gimel, kumilach rayati ulechilach, he emphasizes that I want you to come out and enjoy and create a relationship with me because it will benefit you. Meaning, don't do me a favor. This is going to do you a favor by coming into yourself and by embodying who you are and your potential as a human by engaging in a loving relationship. This will benefit you. And it's not just about me. And I think that it's this really great example of how our loved ones can help us be better versions of ourselves. Okay. And this is, I'll take this on, you know, many of us can't really even remember this stage of life anymore, but sometimes when, you know, people, younger people will speak to me and we'll speak about, you know, dating. And I always will say to them, did you like the version of you that came out when you were with that person? It's also true with friendship. It's not just about a period of life of dating, but we bring out different versions. When we meet different people, it brings out different versions of ourselves. Sometimes we could be a talkative version. Sometimes it could be a quiet version. Sometimes we could be an annoyed version of ourselves, depending how we react to the personality. And what he encourages her to do here is to become a full version of yourself first, for your own benefit, right? Not for me, but for yourself. And then he also said, but I really want you to come out and see me because I love you and I want to hear your voice and I want to see your face. What is her response to this beautiful invitation? Pasuk tetvav, okay, on the left side. Echazulanu shualim, shualim ktanim, mechablim kramim, ucharmenu smadar. And she responds, not with the response that he would hope for. And she says, there are little foxes that have taken hold of us. They're little, they're not huge, right? We can overcome them. And they are ruining our kerem, okay? But our kerem, our vineyard, it is fresh, right? Meaning our kerem has the potential to be fresh. And I want us to remember that the word kerem in Shir HaShirim both can refer to the woman's body, and it also can refer to the love relationship between the dod and the ra'ya. Okay, the kerem is both a specific description of her and also a broader description for the relationship. And so, and it always has somewhat of a sexual connotation. And so she says that these small foxes that have come and that are overtaking, they're ruining our kerem, even though our kerem has a potential to be luscious and beautiful. And she says, "Dodi liv anilo haro'e b'shoshanim," but she's perhaps reminding herself or reminding him that I am for my beloved, and my beloved is for me. Haro'e b'shoshanim, right? And here we have again that description we saw last time, where we have them both being encompassed in one image of both being the he is the ro'e b'shoshanim. He is the one who grazes among the lilies, which is again another metaphor for her. Ad shiyafua chayom v'nasu atzlalim, sov domelech hadodi letzvi o leofer hayalim al harei vater. Now, she says, essentially, I want you to leave for now. She says, until the day passes and the shadows are behind us, sov domelech hadodi letzvi, I want you, my dod, who I've compared, again, like the beginning, which is why it's yellow. It lets us know very clearly that this is the entirety of the poem. As I said, we constantly are in debate in Shir HaShirim how to break up the poems. This is very clearly one poetic unit. It begins and ends with the exact same imagery. And she says that I want you to leave for now. I need this day to pass. I need this period of time perhaps to pass. And she says, where should you go? Al harei vater, to the hills of separation. Okay, so the name she's giving for this place is also metaphoric for what she's saying. She's saying, I need a break. I can't do this right now. I'm not saying no, I'm not rejecting, but I can't be with you right now. Now, if we understand this poem as some sort of thematic continuation of the previous poems, then here we're seeing the couple hit a rut, okay? She, in the past, was pretty into him excited and was the one who was really sending overtures his way. And here we have the opposite, which is also very, very normal in human relationships. So we often have a hard time getting ourselves on the same page, right? First she was into him and he wasn't into her. And here it's the opposite. He wants to see her and she's not sure that this is the right time. But we also are seeing here is that she feels threatened. She still feels not confident in their relationship. That while he is encouraging her to do this for you because he knows that she's not confident, right? He says, don't do this for me. I want you to become a fuller version of yourself. But she still feels threatened. What does she feel threatened by? Perhaps it's Benot Yerushalayim. Perhaps it is still the brothers, or we'll see soon other older male figures that she feels that put her in an unconfident position. But we see here that he comes to see her. He encourages her to blossom like the world around her, but for now she pushes him away. Okay, and that's the movement of this poem. It's a poem of an attempt to come close, a beautiful description of the springtime around them, and with her saying, not yet. I'm not there yet. I'm not ready. It's too early. Okay. I also just want to point out that in this poem, we have really a full use of all the different senses. That it begins with, she speaks about the sense of hearing, where she hears his voice, and she sees him coming to her home. And he, of course, speaks about both her mar'eh and her kol. He speaks about how she looks and her voice as well. So he responds directly to what she brings to him. Okay, we saw that, and we saw this. Now I want us to see a midrashic interpretation of this poem. And it's also a really important interpretation because it brings us right to Pesach. Okay, this is the poem in Shir HaShirim that I think gets most identified with Yetziat Mitzrayim. There's another one that we'll see, I think, in our final class. But this is the poem that is directly correlated with Pesach because, of course, we left Mitzrayim in the spring. Okay, and so you'll see here I brought it in Rashi, but Rashi, as we know, as I explained in our first class, is reworking different midrashim in his commentary. Okay. We'll start with what we have on the right side. Hinei ze omed. Okay, and here that was the earlier pasuk where she said that he's standing outside of her home. Svura hayiti liyashev Aguna od yamim rabim, v'hinei hu hodia shehaya omed umitzitz michalonot hashamayim et ha'asui li sheneemar ra'iti et onyei ami. Okay, and here again, it's already the Midrash, where here it's Am Yisrael speaking. Okay, and Am Yisrael says, I thought I was going to sit here for forever, right? I thought I was going to be spending time in Mitzrayim for the foreseeable future. But God here, as the Dod, was apparently looking, right, looking down from Shemayim. Okay, again, remember the image in the poem where we have, right, this image. Okay, and the Midrash reads, here is Hashem, and here is Am Yisrael, except Hashem is not down, he's above. Okay, and here it's saying that just like the Dod saw the Ra'aya from behind her window, so too God was looking at us. And he was looking at us through the window. He was seeing us suffering in Mitzrayim. And that's when God says, I've seen your suffering. Okay, taken from Shmot Perek Gimel. And so just like the Dod sees the Ra'aya, Hashem saw us. I'm going on to this column of Rashi. Kol ha'inyan hazeh lefi pshuto, lashon chibat pitui, shebechor meretzet arusato lelecha charav. Okay, so the pshat of this poem, says Rashi, is very clear. We have here, and here he thinks that they're engaged, right? Remember, he assumes that this is a marriage that's going on between two people, that he is trying to convince this woman to go after him, right? To be one with him, to be in a partnership with him. Kach asali dodi. Okay, and here we have the Midrashic interpretation. Again, as I explained, is all going towards Yetziat Mitzrayim. Ana dodi al yedei Moshe ve'amar li al yedei Aharon. Okay, here again, it's taking the words of the poem, and you can look at this more afterwards if you want to see it and put the poem parallel with the Midrash. It says dod twice, and the Midrash interprets it as Moshe and Aharon. Kumilach Okay, and here it says go for yourself, and it compares it to when Am Yisrael go and take right? One of those big questions we have about the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim from their Egyptian neighbors, their jewelry. What is the stav? What can it can be compared to this fall? The 400 years that we were in Egypt. Okay, that's how they count the 400 years. Hageshem, shehu, that's the difficult part of stav. Chalaf vehalachlo, klomar. 86 shana, v'chulei v'chulei. I'm going to skip this for a second. It's trying to get to how they count the years that were in Mitzrayim. Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz. I'm skipping to this line here. Hare Moshe ve'Aaron muchanim lachem lechol tzarchichem. Who are these nitzanim that have showed up in the land, says the Midrash? It's Moshe and Aaron who are here to help and deal with any of your problems that you have. She'atem atidim v'maze hazamir higia. Here it's reading it not as the bird, but that it's a time to sing. She'atem atidim lomar shira al hayam. Here it's talking about a time to sing, the time to sing at shirat, at the Yamsuf. Okay, so it's rereading the dod and the singing and the spring and the stav as being the seasons of koshi, the seasons of difficulty that have now been switched for the spring in which we'll be redeemed. What? How do you understand the last part, says the Midrash, of the Shualim HaKtanim? שאף הקטנים היו מחבלים הקרמים בעוד קרמנוס מדר, ושהענבים דקים, כשהייתה בת ישראל יולדת זכר, היא תומנתו, והיו המצרים נכנסים לבתיהם ומחפשים את הזכרים. והתינוק תמון הוא בן שנה או בן שתיים, והם מביאים תינוקות בבית, והתינוק מצרי מדבר ותינוק ישראל עונה הוא ממקום שתמון שם, והם תופסים אותו ומשטיחים ליאור. And the Midrash says, what are these small foxes, right, that are threatening to ruin us? It goes back to the story where the Egyptians had decreed against having any children. What are these small foxes, said the Midrash? They refer to the Egyptian babies, that the Egyptians would go into an Israelite home with an Egyptian baby, have the baby cry, and then they would know that if there was an Israelite baby being hidden in the house, that the baby would cry in response, because babies cry with each other. And so those are the small foxes, says the Midrash. By the way, I'll just say one thing, which is that my 11-month-old just started, that's number 4, Baruch Hashem. She started daycare last week for the first time. She's almost a year old. And it's a horrific sight to see children starting daycare. Honestly, it's horrible. It's like literally watching, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, you know, in farms and they separate the calves from the cows. It's literally that. It's horrific. I felt very happy that she was not the one screaming, which I was felt confident that she was ready to go to daycare. But literally, like, the kids would cry and then another one would cry and then one would cry, another one would cry. And I thought of this Midrash exactly. And when I came to pick her up on the first day, they're like, she's the only one who didn't catch the crying. Like, she was the only one who didn't cry the second everyone else did. But it's exactly what the Midrash is describing, is that they would bring in a Mitzri child to cry so that then if there was a baby there, the baby would respond. Okay. And those are the small foxes. Now this, again, Midrash looks at this poem and says, this is all a metaphor for Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that this invitation that we're given by the Dod to come out, it's the message, I believe also, if we read it into the message I was saying before about the relationship between the man and the woman in the poem, is that God is saying, I don't need you to leave Mitzrayim for me. You need to leave Mitzrayim for yourself. Right? For your own benefit, for you to become who you are destined to be as a people, you need to get out of here. And that is the plea that the Dod gives to the Ra'aya. And I think that that is really sitting at the crux of this Midrashic interpretation, is that Yetziat Mitzrayim wasn't for God in the least so that he could have a people. It was for us so that we could have an identity. And that is exactly what the Dod is trying to explain to the Ra'aya, even though she herself is not yet ready to listen. Okay. You ready for some music? Music part one. I brought two songs. One I brought because I think that it's really just, it's a song that many of us know. And I think and for those of us who don't, we should know that it's based on these psukim. And then I want to show you something that I think is really creative and new. Okay, so I'm going to show you two. I'm not going to play the whole thing because I really want us to get through quite a number of really interesting pieces today. This is from, this is Ehud Banai, the very, I guess, in Israel, well-known uncle of Eviatar Banai, who I brought last week, who had the song of Yafa Kalvana. Okay, and so this is Ehud Banai, who was really one of the first Israeli popular singers who started, became a Baal Tshuva and became religious once he was already famous, and there were many who followed in related footsteps. Again, Ehud Banai, I'm sure many of you know who he is. He's pretty famous, as you'll see soon, not for a particularly good voice, but he's very famous. Sorry about that. So those who are writing in the chat, so I also think it's there. You can, Rabbi Shlomo Karbach also has the song on YouTube, meaning there's a version on YouTube from his discs. I don't know why, because I looked at the credits for the song. It doesn't say that it's Shlomo Karbach, even though I thought it was his originally. So if anyone has an answer to that, I'm happy to hear on the chat. I wasn't able to get to the bottom of that mystery for now, but I'm happy to hear anyone who is. Okay. Again, everyone can look at these. I'm trying to just get to the next one. Okay. Hold on, my computer just went weird. Hold on a second. I know everyone's seeing something weird. Hold on. Hold on. I know it's looking weird. Hold on. I'm going to stop it for a second. And hold on a second. I'm going to have to just fix something. Because of the media, it jumped. Hold on a minute. Hold on. Yeah, the melody is the same. I'm not exactly sure about that whole situation. Okay, one second. Okay, hold on. Okay, we're good, right? Everyone sees the right thing? Okay. Now, what I want to show you here, and again, I tried to get a feel of the crowd before. There's going to be a woman singing. It's not an inappropriate song at all. Everybody could do whatever they feel comfortable with. And, you know, if you, you know, everyone does whatever they want. Okay. No one's looking at anybody. These are cousins. I think that they tried to start making it big right before Corona, which is why their effort, it seems, was not particularly successful. But I think it's a phenomenal song. And basically what they did is they took the poem that we just saw before, And they turned it into the words are in the video, so you'll see them. But they basically turned the song into almost like a girl power, how to sh using it as a way that it strengthens women. And you'll see in the words themselves that they really take the words to try and we see that they're just like the here there though it's the dote, it's the male figure who's trying to say to the woman, be you, right? Be yourself with all your glory and your beauty and come into yourself. But they really take that tone of the poem and they turn it into a really interesting sort of like indie pop song. Okay, so let's give it a go. There's also Arabic in it.
לאחוז במושכות אסורים להתיר להתיר אסורות אח לאח אחות לאחות לחשוף את כל מי שעוד ננסה להשתיק את האחיות לא מפחדים לדבר ישירות לכל תודעה שעוד לא הפנימה רק בת מלך היא מחליטה מתי כבודה בחוץ או פנימה אז כל בני ובנות יעקב תתאחדו תהיו אגרוף שנה הלום באור הטוב שנעשה לסיפור הזה סוף
השמיעי לי קולך
בקודש בחול
השמיעי לי סוטר
השמיעי קול גדול עד שיתאחה בנו הלב הקדום שנוסר וכל לשון תדע לומר הבית הזה מותר
Okay, so I just want to explain that in this, I think it's a very interesting version that they're taking. They say Hashmini et kolech, and they're using it as a slogan for female power, meaning use your voice. Don't let yourself be overtaken by the shadows, but use your own voice and let your voice be heard. Okay, and so it takes the words that we saw and gives them a little bit more of a twist of female empowerment. Okay, so that's a song. Again, they're cousins. They came out with a musical project that's called Hashmi'ini. That's the project itself. Anyways, I thought that was really interesting. And again, all this is available. You can look at it afterwards and listen to more of it. Okay. Just gonna check out the chat. Whoops. And check out the chats for a minute, and then we're gonna move on to our next poem. Aish. Second. It's because whenever I move to after a Okay. Yeah, I never heard it either until this week when I was Googling these words again to see what else came up. Okay, now we're going to another poem. Okay, now this is the first poem in Shir Shirim that is depicting a dream. Okay, now there's going to be two. We're going to see the second one next week. It's really part of the climax of the whole book of Shir Shirim. But here we have the Ra'aya. So it's all in purple. It's the dream that the Ra'aya is describing in this poem. Okay, and it goes like this. Al mishkavi balilot, bikashti et sheva nafshi, bikashtiv velo matzativ. Okay, she says, when I was lying in bed at night, I was looking. Here the word bikashti is really a searching. Okay, it literally means looking for, but it means searching. I was searching for he who my soul loves. It's a very powerful phrase that hasn't been used until now. Etch ahavan of she, right? He that my soul loves. I looked for him, but I could not find him. Now, of course, if we look at this poem, which comes right after the one we just saw, if we look at it as connected, which, as I said, is always the question, is it just an anthology or is there some sort of loose plot line that goes through the poems? Okay, it could be that it's totally separate, but it also has meaning based on the one we just saw before. Because if you remember, at the end of the previous poem, the Re'aya pushes the dot away and she says, no, anche nasuat zdalim, that I'm not there, okay? And if we read it as connected to the one before it, then all of a sudden she's on her bed and she's realizing that she pushed him away and she doesn't want him to be pushed away, right? She's fickle. She's definitely fickle at this point in time. It might have taken him a little bit of time to get on the bandwagon, but once he gets on the bandwagon, he's pretty consistent. Whereas she goes back and forth, I would say that this is a fairly accurate depiction of the male-female nature, which I don't mean all males are all female, but that the male has in the nature of male essence, there's more consistency, whereas for women, we go through a lot more changes, and so our nature has more ebbs and flows to them. And so here she realizes that she's let him go. And what happens? She starts dreaming about him. She says, I got up, and this is all in her dream. I get up and I start running around the city. Okay. And I'm looking in the alleyways and I'm looking in the streets. When she says, but I went and I looked for her. I was searching for my beloved. I looked for him and I could not find him. Mitzauni hashomrim hasovavim ba'il et sheava nafshi ra'item. Okay, now the irony is that she's looking for her beloved, but instead of finding him, others find her. There are shomrim, and here we have again, add this into her brothers. We have these male figures who are a negative, they're negative images for certain and throughout all these poems. But I was found by the guards of the city. I guess there was some rule, some lockdowns. I guess today we can understand this a little bit more. And she says to them, you know, have you seen my beloved? There's no answer on their part. And right as I was passing those shomrim, I found my beloved. Okay, and I held on to him. Now this is all in what we would call the far future. It's not happening, but it's what she wishes will happen, right? And therefore, I will hold him and I will let him go. Until I bring him to the house of my mother, to the house of my parents. We'll get back to that in a minute. And the poem ends, I'll get back to Pasuk Dal in a moment. The Pasuk ends with another statement to Benot Yerushalayim, who we mentioned last week. Benot Yerushalayim are essentially her competition. And she says, I swear, you must swear to me, Benot Yerushalayim, that you will not ruin or awaken this love before it has been fulfilled. Okay. And so again, this is speaking to her lack of confidence. It's speaking to her concern that she is not really the one that he loves. And so she points again to Benot Yerushalayim. And I want to go back for a moment to Pasuk Dalid with this image that she brings him into her mother's home, right? By the way, interesting, it doesn't say Beit Avi. Okay, the women really dominate in the imagery in Shir HaShirim, which is why, again, Rashi and scholars think that it's written by a woman. Or Rashi says that it's written in a female voice, although I'm assuming he's going with the opinion of Chazal that was written by Shlomo. Why does she want to bring him into her parents' home, into literally into her parents' bedroom? It's a funny image. And I think it requires a little bit of further thinking. On a basic level, she wants to feel completely and totally secure, okay? And the most secure place, stereotypically, right, that a human can feel is in their parents' home, right? You feel the most supported and wrapped and held in your parents' home. And it also shows that she's saying, I want you to be my family. I want you to be my family, right? I want you to be in that space. I've made a mistake. Okay. I let you go, but really I want you to be in my parents' home. If we interpret this as an even more sexually explicit image, whereas that she actually wants to have a relationship with him in her parents' bedroom, which right is a little on the ich side. However, what it might be suggesting psychologically is that she really wants to come full circle, that, you know, where she was conceived is now where she will have her spouse. Again, one can interpret this verse on the more or less sexual spectrum, however you interpret it. But she certainly is aiming for a sense of security. And so are so many, okay? Meaning that desire for a sense of complete security, I want to bring you into the most secure place that I know of on this planet. That is what she seems to be, what she seems to be describing in this description of the beloved. The mila mancha, okay, the late word, the word that's most repeated in this poem is bikashti, okay, that I have what she desires or what she's searching for. And that this poem is a poem of searching, of a poem for looking, of going out into that which is foreign, going to the streets and the place where there's guards. It's a place that's not stable and that's not safe. And therefore, when she finally finds him, she wants to grab him from this non-safe space and bring him into the safest space she knows. And that's the space of her family home. And she wants him to be part of her family. And so this poem really, again, expresses her lack of, I would say her lack of security, right? Because she's again pointing to B'not Yerushalayim. And it also points to this feeling that she wants already to be in a stable place with the Dod, but she's not there yet. I want us to see a song that, okay. I'm looking at a comment about Beit Imi. Okay, I have to think about your comment, Bati. I have to think about it more after. To go to a song that's relatively recent from two of Israel's bigger superstars. Ay, so annoying. Hold on 1 second. Oh, there we go. We have Hanan ben Ari. Did I bring a song from him already? I don't think so. Hanan ben Ari is... I mean, he's the king. Hanan ben Ari, if you don't know who he is, has so many famous songs. He is from Guy. He's like 2 years younger than me. He's certainly the top three in Israel in the current times. Just if you don't know who he is, please just go and listen, put on YouTube and go and listen. He has 6 children. He right now has a song out that is totally just blew everyone out of the water. It's called Amen Al Hayiladim Shali. It's a beautiful, beautiful song about the vulnerability that parents feel regarding their children, how they can love all of them and keep them safe. It's just a song that's totally the rage in Israel at the moment. And he made it up of video clips. He asked the public to send in video clips of them with their kids. So the video to go along with the song is people, just regular Israelis and their kids. It's not him per se. Anyway, so Hanan ben Ari is really phenomenal. He rose to fame, I would say, maybe 5 years ago. This is a song that it's really Moshe Peretz's song, but he is a guest on the song. Moshe Peretz is really he's a very popular Mizrahi singer, which means Middle Eastern style. And he's, you know, sort of like, he also was like all in Israel. He's married. He has three children. And this is a song I did together. And in the words on the right, I bolded, although I'm not sure how well I could see the bolding on your screen. I bolded all the words that are taken from this poem that we just saw right now. And this song is one that you can easily interpret to be just, you know, a love song per se, but not really, because in the last stanza, I'll just look at it with you together. It says, Al Mishkavi Balelot, which is of course the opening of our poem, Nafla da'ati Elohim, Nish'ar rak hareach balelot, Kore lecha ahuva belibech, kvar lo oreach. Okay, now again, that here it says, it's hard for me to really translate this, but they put in the word Elohim, and I'm sure they do it on purpose, that it doesn't mean that the whole song is referring to God, but they bring in God to the song. That here it's talking about really a gagua. It's talking about missing one's beloved. Here it's speaking really about a man missing the woman and saying that I miss your smell at night. And that I'm calling you ahuva in my heart. But I think that they also bring in God at the end on purpose so that it's not a song that is only about really a love song. Okay, I'm going to play it. Such a good one. One of my favorite songs. There's no video. This is Moshe Peretz. That's Hanan.
Shmi kole, rachok echad akir vatem. ששורטים את הלב געגוע מעון וכאב שובי אליי שוב, שובי אליי על משכבי בלילות ביקשתי את שאהבה נפשי
Okay, so that is Chana Ben-Ari and Moshe Peretz. I wanted to say Moshe Peretz is like the Justin Bieber of Mizrahi music. That's really like a good comparison there, if that means anything to anyone. But again, it's a song that plays. It clearly has to do with missing a woman, but the words themselves of Shir Shirim are so easily interpreted as being both the human and the divine plane that I have no doubt that that's also why Chana Ben-Ari agreed to sing the song of Moshe Peretz, because he doesn't agree to sing any racy music. So anyway, it's just an interesting cultural piece. So that's their song. We're at 10 minutes more. Something happened with the sound. I don't know. I think I stopped the song. We missed the music. Well, I'm very low. Okay, hold on one second. I'll bring my computer closer. Is that better? No, everyone just said they can barely hear me. Not better. Hold on one second. Hold on, let me switch.
I can hear you fine. I don't know about other people, but...
Okay, a lot of people said they couldn't hear.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm gonna. It might be though that the. I'm gonna. One second. I'm just gonna go back to the.
I cannot hear you.
That's very interesting. You can hear me, but you can't hear Yosef. I can hear her. Okay. I don't know how to explain that. I'm sorry.
You're much louder than she is.
That's in general.
Okay. Now any better? Is now any better?
From my perspective, yes. Can other people hear?
A little bit.
We can hear you, but she is very low.
Very low.
We can hear each other better than we can hear her.
Yosef, I just recommend you speak loudly. What can I say?
I'll try and speak very loudly, but nothing changed since I I don't know. Okay, but so
we hear you now.
Oh, okay, great, perfect. Okay, I think my computer gets very confused when I see that when I share the media and whatever. It's okay. So we're all together. We're all together now. Okay, so we have 10 minutes left, and I want to. I'm a little torn because I want to also learn the poem, and I also really want to show you one more song. So we'll see what we get through. I'll just show you the beginning of the song. So we have here another poem, and this is a poem where we. See Shlomo. Okay, Shlomo HaMelech comes into the song, into the poem. And I have here, it's one poem, but I brought you two ways to look at the poem, okay? Because there's a lot of discussion about how to understand it. As I said to you in Shir HaShirim, whether you add one pasuk, it can change the entire meaning. There's a lot of debates regarding this in all of the commentaries. And so it's one poem, as you see in front of you, but I've divided it into two different ways. Okay, but we're going to start at the version on the top right. Okay, Mizot ola min hamidbar ki timrot ashan mikuteret mor ulevona mikol avkat rochel. Okay, who is this that is coming up from the desert? Okay, now imagine a not a motorcade. What's it called when you have like a whole entourage, okay, a whole entourage of people with this woman who is, and says that the, who's this coming up like timrot ashan, it's like pillars of smoke, but what you really imagine is it's really pillars of dust, right? The dust is being kicked up as the entourage makes its way towards the people that they're going towards. And she is covered. She's covered in all these, in mor, in all these spices, and incense, and you know, which is a pretty phenomenal feat, right? She's just obviously come from somewhere in the desert, yet she is, you know, all beautiful and prepared and looks perfect. And then pasuk zayin, hine mitato shel Shlomo, 60 giborim saviv la migiborei Yisrael. And now we switch completely, which is why there's a big discussion about how to connect these psukim. Okay, now here we have the bed of Shlomo, where there are 60 warriors around it from the warriors of Israel. Kulam achuzei cherev melumadei milchama, Ish charbo al yirecho mipachad balilot. Okay, and all of them are holding, again, here you see the verses are parallel. They're holding swords. They're all learned in war, which is, again, a parallel phrase. And from the fear of night, meaning from all the different bad things that can happen at night. Now, we see this woman, and the classic interpretation is that she is a woman coming to marry Shlomo. Okay, we'll see why, because the last pasuk openly references Shlomo's marriage. And we have a woman, that's picture A. Picture B is that here is the bed of Shlomo that's being surrounded by all these warriors, and she is apparently coming towards that. I'm going to read the next three psukim. Apirion asalo ha-melech Shlomo me'atzei Levanon. Shlomo made himself a palanquin. Okay, I have here a picture. Ugh, so annoying, keeps doing that. Here's a palanquin. I know that it doesn't look right. I'll fix it. Here's an example of a palanquin. Again, imagine we're used to it more from like oriental pictures where people are holding it. You have each holding it there. And so he made for himself a palanquin from cedar. Amudav asa kesef refidato zahav melkavo algaman sticha zahav melkavo mibnot Yerushalayim. One second, that skipped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Someone needs to be... Okay. I don't know who that is, but they have to mute. So here we have a description of the glorious, a palanquin, which was used potentially to be a canopy. Okay, it was used to be a chuppah. How was it made? It was made with all these ornate materials. Tocho ratzuf ahava mibnot Yerushalayim. Okay, and inside it was laden with love acts from Benot Yerushalayim. Now, again, is it a reference to having relations with other women, or is it possibly that the women of Yerushalayim prepared Shlomo's chuppah for his wedding? That's a much more likely possibility. Tzena ureena benot Zion b'melech Shlomo b'atara she'itra lo imo b'yom chatunato u'v'yom simchat libo. Go out and see the daughters of Zion, the king Shlomo, the day, and this is his wedding day, okay, the day that his mother put the crown on his head, the day of his wedding, the day that his heart was happiest. Okay, now we have here a lot of psukim that it's not so clear how to put them all together in a poem, although it's very clear from what comes before and after, this is all connected in some way. Classically, and I'm sorry, I'm going to go through this quickly because I want to show you one other thing, that classically, as I showed you here, Vav Adchet is understood to be a woman coming to marry Shlomo. She gets to his palace, essentially, and there his bed is ready. Again, it was very ornate, prepared to take a wife. And then the last three psukim describe essentially the wedding ceremony. It's not a great explanation because only the last pasuk really describes Shlomo's actual wedding. And so I want to just give you one other suggested interpretation that my advisor, and he has a book on Shir Shirim, that he suggests here. He says that, I'm going to leave Pasuk Vav out for a minute. I also don't think he gives such a great answer what to do with Pasuk Vav. But he essentially says that this woman, right, the woman is speaking, the dod is, she comes up, sorry, she's not speaking. She comes and she arrives, beautiful, already. And then we have two parts, one that is imagined in the mind of the male figure of the dod, and one that is imagined in the mind of the female figure of the re'aya. Okay, the first part, they both use Shlomo as an image in their mind, meaning they're imagining Shlomo's wedding that they probably both experienced living in the era of Yehuda. They probably, it was a tremendous, happy day. It was a tremendous event that people would attend Shlomo's weddings. And he had a lot of them because he married a lot of women. Okay. And so they probably, this was their image of marriage that they had in their mind, the most ornate, phenomenal marriage ceremony that one could have. And each of them describe, says Dr. Assis, describes the same event from a different perspective. That the first one is the male character, the dod, is describing something that is very threatening, right? He's describing Shlomo's bed, which should be something that's romantic and exciting, but he describes it with warriors and with swords, right? It's something that is threatening. The concept of making this commitment is a threatening idea. Whereas when she describes she describes Shlomo. She describes the beautiful wedding ceremony. She describes the palanquin that he builds or has constructed. And so when she thinks of Shlomo's wedding, she thinks of warm, beautiful, romantic images. And when he thinks of Shlomo's wedding, he thinks of really threatening image of commitment that's surrounding the bed. Again, as a metaphor for marriage. This is his suggestion, and he thinks that, again, that the woman coming up from the desert brings up two different images in the minds of the man, the male and the female character. This interpretation has its own issues, but the point being that for those, which is most, who don't think that Shlomo is actually a character in the poems of Shir HaShirim, that the weighing of Shlomo is used as a model for them. Whether or not you think it's a model that it's the female character thinking about the positive perspective on the wedding ceremony and the male character thinking of the negative, or you go with the more classic interpretation that I have divided here, that reflected in the division here, where you have the woman coming, seeing his bed, one would need to explain better the sort of threatening description of all the warriors there. And then you have the description of the actual chuppah, which is the apirion, it's the palanquin, and then the actual seeing the wedding itself, the day that Shlomo was happiest. Again, and of course, thinking that Shlomo is the author of Shir HaShirim, it will be interesting and meaningful that he also puts in a poem that is based on his own wedding day. Now, to end off for today, anyone who has to go, I totally understand that. I just want to show you one other thing. I wanted to show you a song that takes the metaphoric interpretation of these verses and plays it out very clearly. Okay, while in the previous songs, the first song we saw a modern interpretation of Hashmi'ini et Kolech. It was a female empowerment version of those words. The second song, as I said, really was mostly likely a love song of Ga'agua, a longing for a beloved that is no longer there, with perhaps a nod to God in the end of it. This is a song that goes in the metaphor. Okay, it goes in the direction of the metaphor. This, again, I love having everybody meet modern Israeli stars. This is Moti Steinmetz, who is a Hasidic singer in Israel, who is incredibly popular. This song has 10.5 million hits, okay? He is incredibly popular, and he's phenomenal. He rose to fame in his late teens. He is 29 right now. He looks like he's 13 in the video, okay? But he's 29. He has two children. And he is known in Israel for being a singer. You'll see in this, but you should listen to his other songs on YouTube, that his music is, he feels like he's always crying. There's something extremely emotional about the way he sings. There was actually a piece done on him on public television in Israel that you can also see online. And he says that he grew up in a home where his father was like a very, very emotional man. And it clearly came through in him as well. He's like fourth, I think, of nine children. And he's incredibly, incredibly popular. I mean, he's really a megastar in Israel. And he also did a duet with Yishai Ribo, who we'll see him next week. So he's also made it into the not just Haredi circles, and he's phenomenally popular. So this song, the words are on the left side, the psukim we just saw, but within the song, it puts in already the midrash, okay? Biyom chatunato, the midrash says that the wedding of Shlomo, what does it mean? That's the day of Matan Torah, right? That's our wedding with God. U biyom simchat libo, why were we so happy? Ze binyan Beit HaMikdash, right? The day we're so happy was the day the Beit HaMikdash was built. And it adds the word, Chibaneh Bimhera Bimeinu Amen. Okay, and so this song, again, you can look at it on YouTube. It was a song that was made for the Chanukah Bayit for Hachnasat Sefer Torah for a yeshiva in Bnei Brak. Anyways, it has 10.5 million hits, this song. It's obviously a very different style, yeah? It's a very Haredi song, but phenomenal as well. Thank you. the whole thing is like every different scene are different Haredi kolos throughout Israel that make it into the video. Stop it for now, just for the sake of ending somewhat on time. But I hope you get a sense that I showed you many different kinds of interpretations today. It happens to be his music is phenomenal. You really just check him out on YouTube. I mean, he's a phenomenal singer, and he's really interesting, and he's wildly popular here in Israel. Anyways, I'm happy to take any questions. Sorry that we went a little bit over. Next week, we will focus on the climax of Shir HaShirim, which is literally what seems to be really an overtly sexual scene between the Dor and the Ra'iya. And I would say, if anything is famous in Shir HaShirim, so the fall that comes afterwards. And we'll see Rav Soloveitchik's interpretation of that scene as well from a metaphoric perspective. And so that'll be next week's class, Bezrat Hashem. I'm happy to answer any questions. I saw there were a lot of chats. As you saw, every time I tried to look at the chat, it stopped the video, so I can look at it now. But anyways, feel free to unmute yourself and ask me anything.
Okay. The Lech Lecha, I saw Lech Lecha when you're talking about the Lach or the Lecha.
Yes.
That is it remind that's the same thing. And in terms of the bed, being the woman's bed and the man going from bed to bed, there was no parents' bed. Come on, you know, get real. We're talking about a completely different type of family, not anything from the past 100, who knows how many years. So that's proof of Reuven, the big scandal when he took the bed. And
you're trying to say that when she says she wants to take him to her family. So what do you mean?
It doesn't say it was not family. You keep mistranslating.
It says cheder horati, the room of my parent.
Horati, you didn't say imi.
Yeah, but it says beit imi cheder horati. It says both.
Because the beit imi, because the man went from bayit to bayit.
No, the women went.
For the women in the those women, days.
The women went from bayit to bayit. That's what's surprising in this pasuk is that she seems actually very firmly rooted in her family home because she hasn't left it.
The husband had many wives and concubines, and he traveled from one to the other. That's why when Rachel and Leah talk about... is he going to go to you or is he going to go to me?
Okay, so what you're trying to say is that the phrase "beit imi" is that, of course, her she feels anchored in her mother because her father was not. You're saying was not someone that was there with as much consistency. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, because the man is the one who was nayad.
I think though, I think then we'd have to think about the phrase
theologically.
Yeah. I think though the second phrase says hore though. It doesn't say the mother. But I think that's definitely true sociologically and in this case, she hasn't yet left her family home. So she doesn't have yet a connection to another place. So she's still most anchored in her own nuclear family. It says imi and hore. So we have
nuclear family.
What?
No nuclear family.
She's not married yet. She's not married yet. She's an unmarried girl. She lives at home. And
she lives at home. That's very clear that she lives at home. And it says hore, which is why I'm saying family, because it doesn't only say mother. It says mother, and then it says parents. So it's both. But I hear what you're saying, Batya. I appreciate that comment.
Can I, Josefa, could you translate chanta, hateina chanta pageha? Does it mean scent or smell? It's giving out its odor, like the second half of the verse.
Right. So I don't know if it. I have to look at it more specifically. It means to give off or to develop. Meaning, it means that they have developed. I don't know if it necessarily comes along with it a sense of smell.
The reason I'm asking is it's not a common word. It's used here, and
it's only for figs.
But it's used in Sefer Bereshit when Yaakov and Yosef are supposedly, they are chantu. They have been, we translate it as embalmed, but it has to be related to something that it's the same word. So I don't know that embalmed is the correct translation for what they did to Yaakov and Yosef, but it has something to do with herbals and aromatics.
I'm not sure it's the same root. If you send me an email, I'm going to look it up and I'll tell you. I'm not sure it's the same root, actually.
I tried to look it up. So Evan Shoshan doesn't help at
no,
all.
No, you have to look at something called the BDB, which is also online. Brown, Driver, and Briggs. It's the etymological dictionary for Tanakh study.
Okay.
So you can Google it and check it out. And also I'm happy, send me an email and I'm happy to look it up also and share with you what I find. I'm writing my email here. I just can't look it up at the moment.
Okay, as far as I know, it's a specific agricultural term referring only to tanning. Mm-hmm. It's referring to the process of how, as you showed, the tanning, they don't have flowers as normal. The little taina, it starts to develop. And that verb is used to describe specifically and only for tainim, that process of the fruit appearing. Normally you have a blossom, like with a rimon. You have a beautiful red blossom, and then the fruit develops from inside the blossom. With the taina, I think technically there is a sort of a blossom, but you don't see it.
I know. Yeah. I know that. I am a botanist, so I know about the inflorescence, and I know about the development of the fig. It's this word, chet nun tet, which now is used to describe the fig as Shlomo does in Shir HaShirim. But then what they did to Yaakov and Yosef in has the same word. That's my question.
Okay, so I'm gonna look it up after. I don't have an answer right now. Okay,
thank you.
The phrase kumilach lechilach, and there may be some other verbs that are used in that sense. Could that be an emphatic using the lach attached to the verb?
It could be. I could be overinterpreting 100%. Yeah, meaning it could be that it isn't emphatic, and it's not necessarily meant to say. Right. I was reading it as for you, like lech lecha. Okay. Reading it like that. But it could be an emphatic, which would be, I would say, slightly more upshot. I went a little bit off the road.
Well, lech lecha could also be an emphatic.
Correct. It could. And the interpretation of lecha as being for Abraham is the Midrash.
You can see it both ways.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the Midrash, but I think it's the Midrash getting at the depth of the pshat, which is why I did the same thing here in Shir HaShirim. But yes, it definitely isn't emphatic, but I think it also has meaning.
It's also like shlach lecha with the meraglim.
Same thing. And again, the Midrash reads in all those places the kind of reading I just did here. That there was a purpose for the people, for themselves, why it needed to be done. Yeah, exactly.
Yosefa, is that phrase that Tzeina Urena? Is that where they get the title of the woman's classic?
Yep, there it is, right from there.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Thank you.
That is definitely from there, from Shir HaShirim.
And the Uferatzda was an old Karl Bruch song from the '60s, and it definitely predates.
Yeah. It does. It definitely does. I just needed to do a little bit more searching around. I didn't have time to figure out the timeline of how that.
Ask those people.
Yeah, Uferatzda is a Chabad anthem.
Yes.
I don't know who wrote it.
Right.
Yes.
Tzeka, the song that you brought, Hashmini, it's the first time I heard it, but it has a message of actually undermining the entire concept of family life, modesty, isurim and heterim of relationships, and you choose with whom you want to live or how you want to live, is also rendered in the empty room that represents the space, and the flowers floating with words are fragmentations of floating things that don't have existential longevity or traditional anchorage of it. And it is very strange that it comes as part of Shir HaShirim, although it can be connected and seeing as such, but very, very different. The spectrum of the things that you brought forth is amazing, but the only things that can be strongly connected is Hashmi'ini, the word itself, but not the message.
You're speaking about the correlation between the poem itself and Shir HaShirim and that pop song that I brought. Is that what you're referring to, the relationship between those two? Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's definitely a manipulation of the words. It's taking a modern message of, you know, you can do anything and you don't need to be limited by the world around you. And also I stopped by the rap, by the way, also because I didn't bring the psukim, the lines, but the rap itself also is calling for, in egalitarianism, it speaks about achim va'achayot. It's not dor and ra'aya, and it's true. The song is it changes and alters the message that the poem itself gives, which as you see, I think it's fascinating. I love to see how people take, you know, words and interpret it artistically. You know, sometimes I bring you a song because I think it sounds great, and sometimes I bring it because I think that they do something really creative with the words. But I agree with you that the message that the song is giving off is not at all the message that's in the poem in Shir HaShirim.
The images are sort of simple.
Like, it's tefillin.
Two people are talking the same.
The tefillin, the empty home, the floating things are a message of itself. And I wonder what they meant and how we feel about it. Anyways, thank you for an amazing lesson.
And yeah, we could all listen to those songs again and think about the words more. Someone else was to say something. I'm not sure who it was.
Oh, I was just making a comment about the images on the video. You know, they're simple, in quotes, simple, but they're so evocative and powerful. It's a beautiful combination of the visual and the words. Unbelievable. Thank you for sharing such a variety of sources. It's unique. Thank you.
My pleasure. I would say it's pretty reflective of me. I like getting inputs from all over. I will say, by the way, that song, that initial song, help me out with the English. In Hebrew, it's called a shir mecha'ah, like a song of protest, but there must be a better phrase for that in English. Can anyone share that with me?
Protest song.
Yeah, protest song. Okay, so yeah, so that's in Hebrew, we say the same thing. So that's what it is. It's really a protest song. But what I love about that song is that it's taking two people who are not religious. Their worldview is not, say, religious. But it actually speaks, if you listen to it again, it speaks very highly, right? He says, Bekodesh, he uses, you know, we need to, you know, take all of these, you know, release ourselves from the shackles of the negative ways that we relate to each other, the negative ways we oppress women. But re-inhabit ourselves with Kedusha, and meaning it's a really great, I don't know, snapshot of like where modern Israelis are holding right now. That, like, you know, again, modern Israeli secular culture, that like there's a whole, so many who are looking at the Mikorot, they're trying to take inspiration from our sources and package it into the modern world that they're living with a tremendous desire for meaning. I mean, the top songs in Israel now are not pop songs. The top songs and singers are people who are singing songs that have meaningful and religious messages, hands down. Mm-hmm. Like that's the Renaissance in Israel right now within the music.
Mm. She's so strong in such a subtle way.
Yeah, totally.
Her
presentation. She's like a mom. She's a few kids also. Like, I Googled her after. Like, every, you know,
really? Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, okay, I'm gonna end for this evening, but it was great to see everyone, and I'm looking forward to seeing you all next week.
Thank you.
Pleasure.